Well, my next guest is the author of the advice column Ask Amy, which is syndicated around the country, read right here in the Chicago Tribune. The long-running columnist Amy Dickinson has helped thousands of people with their personal relationships, their love lives, their issues with family. So it's only natural that Amy would turn her own story of love, life, and trying to let go and live on into a memoir. Her new memoir is called Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, a memoir of love, loss, and coming home, out on Hatchet Books. Amy splits her time between here and her hometown of Freeville, New York these days, after a long run of living here in Chicago. But she's back this week. She's my guest tonight. She's going to be doing an event with Bill Curtis at the Victory Gardens in Lincoln Park on Sunday. It's 7 o'clock, but she's my guest tonight at the big table. Amy, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Justin. It's really a pleasure.
In the book, you say you have like 4 houses. It's crazy. I mean, you're all over the place, but you do. You split time now. I mean, the idea of, for a long time here in Chicago, when you were doing the column, you lived here in Chicago,
yeah.
But you actually live right now in the town you grew up in.
Yeah, actually, that's sort of the heart of my story. About 9 years ago, I did what 4 in 10 Americans are now taking care of an ill or elderly family member, and I moved back to my hometown, like a lot of people are doing, to help take care of my mother during her final illness. And the houses is funny. I mean, it sounds one way, but as anybody who is from a small town would know, you end up with property because you can't sell
it. Right.
Or, you know, it's like I've inherited now 2 houses. One of them I'm holding on to for sentimental reasons, but the other one I have a cousin living in. So it's crazy.
You know, for you, I mean, the story is a lot about coming home. I mean, it's even in the subtitle, but this concept of reexamining how you grew up, but also how you chose to live your life. I mean, because there's a lot that goes into this, and I find it interesting because you help so many people deal with the issues that you have to confront yourself. I mean,
yeah, guess what? I have some problems, right? I mean, you know, part of this is about me, and I will say after writing this book, I have felt such a connection with the people that write to me, this incredibly deep connection, because without, I hope, being too indiscreet, I reveal my own problems. Like, I have problems. I have challenges. I don't always do the right thing. I've made mistakes. And my life is very human scaled. I have not led an extraordinary life. Honestly, I'm leading a very, very ordinary life. But there is drama in everyone's life.
Yeah.
Look, if you are in a relationship with another person, whether it's a sibling, parents, children, spouses, there's drama and story.
You know, for you, I mean, you hear drama and story all the time. That's part of your job, is to be able to sort of sort it out for people. Is there any impact on your life, the fact that you have to deal with so much other people's trauma and sort of having to be a calming influence or someone who's answering their questions? How does that impact your life?
Well, one impact is that I have found that my work, like a lot of people, my work is a bit of a refuge sometimes, and it's sort of easier to solve somebody else's problem than to really heal what ails me. And that honestly was one of the things I have wrestled with in my middle age, is how not to just bury. I can function through anything. Most of us can. But I got to a point where I was facing, like a lot of people in my age group, I was facing so much loss. It was just one on top of another. I found that I was not able to just skip to my loo past these things. And I was quite, I hit a period of depression, and I found that I was not able to paper over what was ailing me.
Yeah, it's so interesting, and I want to talk about that because, you know, I loss is a big part of this book, and we could talk about it later because I have it all sort of
lost. Like, the musical.
Amy Dickinson's my guest, and so, but I mean, let's go back to home.
Yeah,
let's start with home, because there was something in your childhood. I mean, there your mother was of the attitude, you know, fly away, like the idea of going out and seeing the world, and you will find your way around. So there is something just sort of, not ironic, but just sort of quaint about the idea of going out, becoming a person who goes to the big cities and solves other people's problems and ends up right where you started.
Right. My mother, actually, I was raised on a dairy farm in this little village of 500. And my mother encouraged us all to leave. I mean, she didn't just encourage us. She gave us a little bit of a boot in the behind. So, you know, the idea was you turn 18 and you will be moving, you know, out of the house. And my life and my choices, I was the one that wanted to stay close. And she was like, oh, no, you're the one that needs to go. So I have lived in Washington, New York City, London, Chicago. And yes, my life took me full circle right back to the tiny patch of earth where I was born and where my family's lived since 1790.
A lot of people who might be listening to this program, they didn't leave. You know, maybe they grew up in their own Freeville, New York, mm-hmm. and they, you know, they understand, like, they stayed at home or they stayed in town, and that is a lot of the 500 people that are still in the town you live in, you know, sort of stayed in this area. Do you think that you'd be the same person you are if you stayed in the place that you were?
No, I honestly don't. I think part of my skill, as it were, as an advice giver, is the chances I've taken with my own life. I have really, really, like, held my nose and jumped into the deep end a few times. And that has, and honestly, Justin, I think growing up in a really sort of secure household enabled me to be brave because I always knew I had a backstop.
Yeah.
I was actually in Los Angeles yesterday, and let me do a little bragging here. But so I was meeting with a Hollywood producer about, you know, books, movies, TV. The best part of those meetings is when you get to brag about having them. Nothing ever happens.
Right.
But the producer said to me, wow, this is so weird. I thought you were this, like, I've read your column for years. I always thought you were like this aristocratic, you know, Park Avenue lady. And she said, then I read your book. And I was like, what? She's just like me. So I just feel like we're all a little bit of a mess, you know? And that's why I write this column.
I think of a lot, you'll hear this from a lot of young novelists, and this concept from writers throughout the ages that you have to live a life before you can write about it. And in your case, it's almost like you have to live a life before you can comment on it or give advice about others. I mean,
look, I don't want to sit in my tower and tell you how to tie your shoes. I mean, the people that write to me have very sometimes tragic, sometimes very, very sad, but lots of times very commonplace issues that they're wrestling with. And by commonplace, I mean my wife or husband, my partner cheated on me, but we're trying to stay together. Well, I did that. You know, like,
there, right?
I didn't do the cheating, but I was definitely in the can we stay together camp. And trust me, I never thought I would want to stay with someone who had cheated on me. But then it happened. And then I was like, oh, I definitely want to stay in this relationship. Well, if I had never had that experience,
you wouldn't have that perspective. Right?
Now I would approach a question like that, and I would go like, "Dump the bum." But you know what? I get it. Sometimes you want to stay in the relationship.
Amy Dickinson is my guest. She's, of course, the syndicated advice columnist of Ask Amy, which can be read here in Chicago, Chicago Tribune. Her memoir is Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, a memoir of love, loss, and coming home. She's my guest tonight at the big table. She's going to be on stage with Bill Curtis. Bill Curtis will be interviewing Amy and some other things at the Victory Gardens in Lincoln Park on Sunday night, 7 o'clock here in Chicago. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with Amy Dickinson here at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest at the big table tonight, Amy Dickinson, the great longtime advice columnist. Ask Amy, of course, syndicated around the country, read right here in Chicago at the Chicago Tribune. Her new memoir, Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, a memoir of love, loss, and coming home, is out on Hatchet Books. She's going to be speaking with Bill Curtis on Sunday night at the Victory Gardens in Lincoln Park, the old Biograph. coming up, like I said, 7 o'clock. Amy, I mean, a lot of this book, I mean, you talk about love, loss, and coming home. We covered home. Love plays a big part in this. And not just, you know, sort of falling in love, but falling out of love, dealing with some of the things you don't think about when it comes to love. I mean, love stories. There's so much that goes into this. But let's start with, you know, it's interesting because you chose early on, and we kind of ended the last segment just about your own life and what happened with you. But your first marriage ended, and you were a single mother with a, what, two-year-old daughter?
Yeah, I had a two-year-old daughter, and we lived in D.C. And then when she was entering ninth grade, we moved here to Chicago when I got the Ask Amy columnist job. And I was a single mother for almost 20 years. And I was really single. I mean, it's not like I had relationships, honestly, Justin, of any duration. I was...
There's a couple interesting blind dates.
There were a good few interesting blind dates. But yeah, I was very much alone and very used to that.
What I love about the book, you talk about just the idea of Emily having almost a middle-aged woman upbringing, like, and the fact that your friends and everything around you like created a world that was very adult.
Right. My daughter was always surrounded by these smart middle-aged women, my colleagues here at the Tribune. And I mean, one thing I don't think I did a great job of was showing her, I come from a family of women. There's a lot of divorce in my family. And I felt like my daughter had not really been around many like super functioning long-term partner relationships. Oops, my bad, you know. But the good thing is I also didn't expose her to a lot of the nonsense that goes along with
the drama, right?
Yeah, with 40-year-olds trying to get together and all of that. So it wasn't really until Emily left the house and went to college and I moved back home. And that's when I fell into the like Lifetime channel / Lifetime, the Hallmark movie of, so I minded my own business, Justin. I want to, you know, state for the record, but I called somebody I went to high school with. I called him to come. He's a contractor, and I called him to come do a renovation on the house, and ended up renovating me instead. It's like, it's so great because it was like this, you know, really hunky, like, contractor with a tool belt, drives a pickup truck, and so wonderful Bruno sort of drove back into my life, and we had a very, very, very whirlwind.
The courtship, which is a big part of the book, is really, I mean, and this is almost straight from the pages of your advice column. I mean, this idea that you sort of tend to move fast. You like something, you're passionate about it. You want to go there. And Bruno, he wanted to take his time. He was also coming off a divorce, and he didn't want to get into it. And there's just this really sort of, like you said, I mean, this fairy tale Hallmark Channel courtship that happens that is pretty unexpected.
Yeah, and guess what? Guess what this guy said to me on our very first long phone call? I was here in Chicago and we had that first phone call. And Bruno and I were sort of trading stories about our marriages. And he said something to me. I mean, if this isn't a bumper sticker, I don't know what is. He said, "I have an idea, Amy. Let's do everything differently." And you know what we did?
Right.
We did everything differently. And that meant that we had an old-fashioned, in quotes, courtship, and we got to know each other, and it was very, very different.
It became a mantra for you in a way. I mean, you had to continually remind yourself that, hey, we're doing things differently.
Yeah, and you know, like Dr. Phil always says, how's that working for you? You know, if you're somebody who has had sort of a pattern of behaving a certain way and you don't like the result, the long-term result, then you need to be willing to switch it up. And fortunately for me, I fell in love with somebody who was very wise. And as a builder of buildings, he really does see patterns. And as a designer and a builder, and so he applied this thinking And it was really brilliant.
You know, for you, to even what you were talking about being here in Chicago and sort of being, single.
Yeah,
this idea that this is what your life, but this is how you lived your life. Was it difficult to sort of picture yourself falling in love and doing something, having another marriage, deeper into your life?
Justin, I was like, everybody wants to be in love. Like, I wanted that. But in terms of marriage, I had absolutely no intention ever of marrying again. And partly because I have done very well. I've been successful. And I got all my stuff. I got all my stuff around me like a Jane Austen character. Like, I don't need to get married because I might lose some of my stuff, you know? And I honestly had done well as a single mother. I had loved my friendships. And I have lots of sisters. And so, no, I didn't need that kind of trouble. And what do you know? The minute I fell in love with him, I wanted to get married.
Right. But what was it? I mean, that's the beauty of this book, is this idea of what pushed you over. What, again, made you jump off the deep end? What made you think about changing sort of your preconceived notion of what you thought your life was going to be?
Yeah, I wanted to get married, and that impulse was very strong. The force was strong within me, and I can only describe it as like this chemical feeling of like, we have to seal this so that we will be joined together, and that we'll, like, I just wanted to stay with him forever, you know? And marriage... You know, marriage provides the avenue for doing that. As somebody who had a very brief first marriage, it wasn't quite the road for me to take.
Right.
But I was so confident. And honestly, it was really smart.
Is it hard for you to go all in being an advice columnist when there's so many people that will write in about their struggles when it comes to relationships or marriages or couples in that regard? I mean, does that ever get in the way of your own sort of path, your own happiness?
Honestly, most of all, it's educated me. It really has. Look, if you make your living sitting quietly, sort of contemplating the human condition, you're going to be... try to be smarter, you know, every time I make a big move, I try to be a little smarter than I was last time. And I've learned a ton from my readers, a ton.
Amy Dickinson is my guest tonight. She's the author of the memoir, Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, a memoir of love, loss, and coming home. She's going to be on stage with Bill Curtis at the Victory Gardens on Sunday for a reading and an interview. She's also, of course, the columnist behind the syndicated advice column, Ask Amy, which can be read here in Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break. We'll get the news from Rob Martyr. We'll come back. I really want to talk about the next step, because it wasn't just Bruno. It was Bruno's family. And with Mother's Day coming up, we can talk about parenting, but probably more important, step-parenting, which you found yourself in after the marriage. Amy Dickinson, my guest tonight. Rob, it's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Amy Dickinson in studio tonight. She's my guest at the big table. Her new memoir, Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, a memoir of love, loss, and coming home, is out now. She will be speaking alongside Bill Curtis, who will be interviewing her and being a part of the festivities on Sunday night at the Victory Gardens, right there at Fullerton and Lincoln, the old Biograph Theater. It'll be Sunday night, 7 o'clock here in Chicago. You know, as I mentioned, I mean, the courtship goes on with Bruno. You have a wonderful wedding. Everything that goes, you let go. You take your own advice that you've given countless times to people in your column. You have a tremendous wedding, and it all goes off.
Yeah. Now, talk about, like, weddings. I mean, weddings. We're coming up on wedding season in my column, Justin. So I get so many questions about weddings. I do not write an etiquette column, but weddings,
you learned a lot about it. Yeah.
So weddings create drama and problems in families. So when it was time to have my own wedding, I was like, I don't want any trouble. And my Bruno and I, we planned it ourselves. We had it. We hosted this wedding on our farm. We invited whoever we wanted, and we didn't take it personally if people couldn't come.
And you started early.
we involved our families. I know. I am this like super on time person.
Yeah, I've read many occasion of weddings that start late. I've never read of one that starts early, and you wanted to start 5-10 minutes early.
Yeah, I actually went bounding down the aisle like, "Woo, we're getting married!" Yeah, that was crazy.
Well, I mean, after the wedding, I mean, you and Bruno brought your families together. Your daughter Emily and Bruno was three or four.
He had three daughters living at home at the time. Emily and our oldest were both at college, so he was single dad with three full custody of three daughters, and I was moving into the household like Mary Poppins with my little carpet bag and my cat.
Well, I mean, a lot of what you talked about at the beginning about, you know, hey, we all have issues and I don't want to say the word problems. We have issues and we have things that we have to deal with, one of which for you was step-parenting in the way that even – and I love the scene. There's a great scene in the book where Bruno decides to tell his daughters, alone, and you tell your daughter alone, and the reaction
that we're getting married, right?
That you're getting married,
and of course,
priceless.
We were so happy. We had gotten to know our children, so we assumed that they would be happy, if not absolutely delighted for us. So he tells his kids, I tell Emily, we decided to do it at the same time but separately. And I call this chapter in my book The Grenade in the Kitchen, because it's like he pulled a pin and threw a grenade into the kitchen. And the girls were, all of our daughters were really upset, very, very, very upset. And when you think about it, why wouldn't they be upset? They were all living super stable households with a single parent who they adored. Like what? You know,
why change it, right?
Why change it? And of course, this brings me to my perennial wisdom about children, which is that our kids don't care if we're happy. They really don't. They care if they're happy. And I remember feeling this way as a teenager. Like, and when people write into me and they're like, I just want to be happy in my kids, I think, don't kid yourself. Your children care about their lives. And anything that happens to you, you're kind of messing with their life.
Yeah.
And you just need to be aware of it. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. But...
Right. And also, I mean, in your experience that you had when you told your daughter and she ran out of the car and she was sobbing, there's a great line, this idea that, you know, that we always think of that we're going to have trouble letting go of our kids. But you would never think about them having to let go of us in a way.
I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. And here we were, and especially my relationship with my daughter. I mean, we had been basically dating for almost 20 years. And here I was telling her that relationship was going to change. And she was devastated. She got over it.
She got over it. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the happy part of the story. But moving into the house and being a part of their lives, your stepdaughters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a lot of sort of eggshell walking and learning how to communicate with a family that already has their own set of communication. I mean, it really was a 101 for you when it comes
to a
lot of the things that you had to deal with that are questions in your column.
Totally. I mean, imagine literally moving into a household with three adolescent daughters, teen daughters, and I brought my cat. And we had not cohabited. We had never spent a night together. And so it was pretty challenging. And when Bruno and I came back from our honeymoon, one of my new daughters told us that she was pregnant. And here she was, a high school senior. And so I entered this family system with a really... you know, upset pregnant teenager and trying to sort of mentor her through that. She did the best she could. I freaking flipped out.
You're living an advice column. You understand, this is, I feel like Amy should write Amy.
Yeah. And you know, there were moments where there's this one moment where, of course, everything, it's always a blizzard. You know, we live in the snow.
I was going to say, how many blizzards?
Always.
A blizzards in this book.
A blizzard.
Yeah.
I was standing in our bedroom, my mother dying 5 miles away. I was with her almost constantly, working, traveling, and we have a baby coming into our house. And my dear man Bruno said to me, like, what's wrong? Like, what's wrong? Hey, what's wrong? And I said to him, it's like the universe said to the advice columnist, you know, advise this bitch, see if you can handle this.
Right.
I was so overwhelmed. I was completely overwhelmed.
How did you get through it? Because that's I think what everybody wants to know, because there are moments in their lives where they're overwhelmed. They're listening right now. They're overwhelmed.
Right. For me, Justin, the big secret is this. I am competent. I'm a fixer. I think I can hold the world up. I think there are a lot of moms and dads out there who think they can shoulder the universe. And one of the things that happened to me was I had to absolutely surrender in a way that was very frightening. I had to surrender to uncertainty. I had to surrender. Look, I'm the one that tried to start my own wedding 10 minutes early because I was ready, you know, and to give up on the control and to realize that my roller coaster, like I was at the top, and you know that when you're at the top of the roller coaster, yeah. It's like tick, 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 tick. And it was a really, really rough ride for me. And to know, especially when you're taking care of an elderly parent, to know that that parent will die is devastating, devastating.
Well, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the death of your mother because a lot of the book, I mean, you talk about grief and you talk about how, as an advice columnist, you have dealt with that or told people. And there's the sort of the lines that are like, you know, think about yourself or what, take care of yourself.
Right, be gentle toward yourself.
Be gentle toward yourself. Mm-hmm. And all of that advice could be applied to you in the situation when your mother passed, yet it was of no comfort. It was of no solid because of the fact that you firsthand were having this experience with grief, a grief that, you know, sometimes is hard to control.
Well, and, you know, again, in my arrogance, right, I was with her when she died. My sisters and I were we did everything we could. You know, I'm not saying we did everything right. It was sometimes this crazy horror show, but we did everything we could. What shocked me was the depth of the loss afterward. I honestly felt like something had emptied out inside. And a big part of this book is about really struggling through some depression, trying to function, really just sometimes just powering through or acting as if I was fine, but I was not. And a very slow and gradual sort of return to life, which I'm happy to say. I mean, I love to tell people, spoiler alert, happy ending, you know?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I think it can apply to a lot of people. It's relatable, the story of pre-grieving.
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know, this idea that your parents, as they get older and you take them into your care, there is this idea that you see sort of death on the doorstep and you know that it's coming and there's visits to the emergency room and the ICU.
And it gets more and more gothic, you know, and you watch somebody suffer. You don't want that. There are times when you long for the day when you won't have to do the things you're currently doing. And I certainly thought that I had really prepared myself. And of course, there's the arrogance of just being me. It's like, oh, I got this. I've written about it. I've read about it. Well, living it was really, really kicked me in the butt, yeah. Frankly. It was very hard, very hard.
And I think, I mean, that the idea that you felt like you would have this deep breath when your mother was gone. This idea that you had lived out, you had had the ability to read to her. There were great moments where music was a big part. I mean, took it to the movies.
Right.
I mean, you had this idea that you had closure.
Right. Oh, and closure. Yeah, I love that. Right. So I'm here to tell you, closure is a crock. All right.
But that's what you learn from this, right?
Closure. I don't know. I think it's really unrealistic to expect closure. And frankly, my expectation of some sort of closure, I think, delayed my healing. I really do. And for me, what I had to do was, again, sort of surrender to the magnitude of my sadness, which is very hard to do because you don't know when you're in it if there's a bottom to it.
Right. Well, a lot of this book, Amy Dickinson, my guest, the longtime advice columnist, Ask Amy, of course, syndicated around the country, as well as here at the Chicago Tribune, Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, the memoir. You know, there's a lot, and even in this interview, we've talked a lot about surrender and this concept of feeling like you're in control and then realizing that you're not. And whether or not you have the fortitude or strength to recognize that you're not, or when someone tells you you're not in control, you know what, it's okay to grieve.
Right.
There's a great scene in the book with the therapist who says, "Yeah, your mom died." That's
right. I know.
Can
you imagine?
I
have a therapist here in Chicago I visit who is really a game changer. And I literally said to her, "Why am I so sad?" I mean, this is after years of therapy, by the way. I'm like, "Why am I so sad?" And she said, "Well, your mother died, you know, and you miss her." Like, but again, it's sort of like I was not looking at my own life the way I would look at somebody who wrote to me for advice, you know?
Does it change it for you now?
I mean, oh yeah.
Like,
oh,
if somebody says I'm having a hard time getting over something, do you now have a different perspective instead of saying, you know what, take care of yourself, it'll be okay, time is good. I mean, do you now have a different sort of understanding of grief from the experience with your mother?
Honestly, Justin, now instead of saying buck up, come on, it's okay, get together with friends, take a walk. Like, instead of that, I'm like, give in, like. You have to, because there's something about grief that opens you up. And if you are around people who will watch you and watch over you and help to take care of you, I think it really is a profound human experience to go through that opening and that and to be that vulnerable. It's pretty profound.
For you, you know, there's a great sort of moment where you have to face, you know, cleaning out the house.
Oh, yeah.
And Bruno, who is a contractor and has had already given you sort of a less than stellar renovation plan for your other house. Right,
right, like, right.
But in this case, you know, you said, I don't know what to do with it. And he came in and take a look. And his answer was one that seemed to be metaphorical for you, this idea of renovation, this idea that this is a gem.
Yes.
This house is a gem. You should keep it. Let's not sell it. Let's renovate it and make it part of our family.
Right. And this is a 200-year-old, you know, falling down farmhouse, basically.
How important was that for you?
Well, it was a huge moment. Bruno came through. I was so paralyzed. That's a big part of the grief process, I think, for a lot of us, is just total paralysis. Like, I can do what I have to do, but I can't do anything else. And he came into this little house. He walked through with his contractor's, you know, eye. And I said, tell me to sell it. I'll sell it. I don't care, you know. And he said, Amy, this house is a gem, and you're a gem. And I want to fix it for you. And God bless him, he did. He fixed it up. It is it's such a sweet place of respite for me. Yeah.
You know, we start where we end where we start. I mean, this idea of coming home.
Yes.
You know, and you renovated the house. You had, now, as we kind of joked about at the beginning, you have four places, but home means something to you. I mean, this the way that the family comes together, the way that you were able to grieve your mother and be in the same place that you grew up and where she lived and where she raised you. I mean, there's something about home that is a central part of not just your story, but how we live our lives.
Right. And, you know, for me, that's not closure. That's spring. That's springtime. That's continuation. Because when I'm at my mother's little house, which I use as an office, by the way, it's very quiet. I look out on a garden that that my mother tended during her life, but that garden is about 150 years old. And it's so metaphorical to watch a garden come up in spring. And so for me, that's not closure, that's continuation. And that's what I want. I do not want to forget these people in my world.
Right.
But I do want to go on.
Amy Dickinson, of course, the longtime syndicated advice columnist, Ask Amy, which can be read here in the Chicago Tribune, is the author of Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, a memoir of love, loss, and coming home. She'll be on stage. You can meet Amy. You can hear her read, interviewed by Bill Curtis at the Victory Gardens this Sunday night at 7 o'clock over in the old Biograph space in Lincoln Park right there on Lincoln Avenue. Amy, a pleasure to have you in studio at the Big Table. Really appreciate it.
Justin, thank you so much. It's a joy.